moving to Eastern Europe and the broader Russia-Ukraine theater because there have been significant developments in the last 48 hours. Zelensky confirmed that Ukrainian drones struck the Dubna Space Communications Center near Moscow for a second time on June 30th, just over a week after the first strike. That facility is one of Russia's key satellite command hubs, and hitting it twice in rapid succession is strategically meaningful. It suggests Ukraine has either found a repeatable strike corridor or is deliberately signaling that Russian space-based communications are now a sustained target, not a one-off demonstration.
Separately, drones hit Moscow again as what's being described as a Crimea crisis mounts. The combination of strikes on Moscow itself and on military critical infrastructure near the capital represents a shift in Ukrainian targeting philosophy. Early in the war, Kyiv was cautious about striking Russian territory directly, partly for diplomatic reasons, concerned about NATO allies' comfort levels. Now, with the war in its fifth year, Ukraine appears to have concluded that deep strikes serve both military and psychological objectives.
Which makes Poland's decision to scrap its MiG-29 transfer to Ukraine particularly poorly timed, or perhaps deliberately timed, depending on how you read Warsaw's domestic politics. Poland has been one of Ukraine's most committed backers, but this reversal deepens a rift that has been building around grain trade disputes and broader questions about the costs Polish society is bearing from the war. The MiG-29s aren't modern aircraft. They were Soviet-era jets. But the symbolic weight of a frontline NATO ally pulling back a promised military commitment is real.
And then there's the Lukashenko factor. Belarus's authoritarian leader just met with Xi Jinping after reportedly complying with a Ukrainian ultimatum to stop supplying attack drones to Russia. The sequence there is interesting. Ukraine apparently issued a credible threat, Lukashenko complied, and then immediately flew to Beijing, which suggests he's looking for a new patron dynamic, or at least reassurance that China still has his back, even if he's pulling back from Russia on one specific weapons pipeline.
Xi's meeting with Lukashenko also fits into the broader pattern we saw from the CPC anniversary speech. Xi used the 105th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party to make explicit vows about military buildup and Taiwan reunification. These speeches are carefully calibrated. They're not improvised. The fact that Xi chose this particular moment to emphasize Taiwan while also meeting Lukashenko, and while the U.S. is consumed with Iran, suggests a deliberate signaling campaign about where Chinese strategic attention is focused.
The Taiwan statement is worth examining precisely. Xi has made reunification vows before, but the pairing with explicit military buildup language is notable. It's a message to Taiwan's government, to the U.S. 7th Fleet, and to domestic Chinese audiences simultaneously. For investors and business analysts, the Taiwan signal has direct implications for semiconductor supply chains, TSMC's fabs, the global chip industry, all of it runs through scenarios about what happens if that strait becomes contested.
And the Air Force's disclosure this week that the B-2 stealth bomber can now fire stealth anti-ship missiles is not a coincidence in terms of timing. That capability announcement, publicly disclosed for the first time, is directed squarely at scenarios involving naval power projection in the Western Pacific. The B-2 with anti-ship missiles changes the calculus for any adversary fleet operating in contested waters. It's the kind of capability reveal you make when you want potential adversaries to factor it into their planning.